It's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out there on the edge of the prairie. We've gotten some snow. Even better than that, we've gotten frost. Frost. When you have a clear night and you have high humidity, you wake up in the morning and everything is covered with frost. You wake up to this glittery white, magical world. It more than makes up for the flu, which was terrible this year. People feeling so crappy, but when you look out the window and you see ice covering everything around. I used to look out the breakfast window when I was a boy, and I looked out at that magical world. And I remember thinking to myself, when I was 8, 9, 10 years old, I thought to myself, when I get older and I'm a writer, I hope that I remember what it was like to be a kid and what it felt like so I can write it down. And of course I didn't. You harden as you grow up and you become passive and you're full of cliches. And things are no longer new to you anymore. You can only come to San Francisco for the first time once, after all. But when you look out and you see frost on all the bare branches of the trees and the spruce needles and every blade of grass out there in the meadow, you get some memory of what it was like to be a kid and the magical world of winter. Kids were freer then. I don't know what it's like to be a kid now, but kids grow up faster because they've got adults watching them all the time. And there are all those books about child development on every family's bookshelf. And the kids read them as well as the parents do. So kids worry about falling behind, and they want to stay up with the group and with all of the others, parents watching them all the time, and kids worrying about things. My mother worried, but she didn't inflict it on the rest of us, except when my cousin Roger drowned and we all had to take swimming lessons. But otherwise, we were free. I smoked for the first time when I was 9 years old. Babysat for the people next door, and they left their pell-mells around, and I took out a pell-mell and I tried to figure out which end to light, and then I lit it, and I took a drag on it, and then I sat down and I put my head between my knees, and it was a powerful experience. 8 years old, she had no idea, none whatsoever. I smoked, boys smoked down at the warming house, down at the skating rink. You'd go down there and boys would sit and they would exhale into the wood stove in the corner, blazing heat it gave off. You sat in there, all these kids sat there unlacing their skates and taking them off because their father didn't want to buy them new skates every year, so the skates were always too small, and so they cut off the blood in your toes, and you had no feeling in your toes. You took off the skates, and you couldn't feel your feet as you walked back and forth on this rough plank floor, and you weren't sure if maybe your toes would have to be amputated, and you'd be a crip for the rest of your life. And then you started to feel pain in your toes, and you knew that you were okay. Boys smoked in the warm. I smoked in the warming house. I sat on the bench, and this strange girl came in, not one of ours, and she was wearing black leggings, very tight, and she sat down next to me for some reason, and she asked me if I smoked. And well, I had smoked twice, so I said yes. Not wanting to seem like a greenhorn, and she asked me if I had a light. No, I said, I left them in the car. I was 12 or 13. Well, she fished around in her purse. I got to look inside her purse. Fascinating, all what was in there. She found a pack of Marlboro cigarettes, and she pulled out one for herself, gave one to me. I took it. We held it. She had matches. She gave me the book of matches, and I lit it with one hand, and she took my hand in her hand. It was so exciting. She pulled my hand toward her face, toward her cigarette, and she held the flame under her cigarette, and she inhaled, and she blew smoke out her nose. It was so erotic. I lit my cigarette, and I smoked. I took a drag. That's all I needed back then. When you're a kid, you don't need as much smoke to excite your nerve endings. If she had asked me to marry her, I would have followed her anywhere. But she was an older, she was 18, and then a boy came in and she was with him, and my heart was broken. But when you're young, you get over it. You go down to the warming house now, and they're playing these old songs of an older generation, Red Sails in the Sunset, and I'll See You in My Dreams, and Only You Can Make This World Seem Right. All these songs of an older generation, almost too old to go skating. You see them coming down the gangway, people of that generation, old people my age, and they're teetering and tottering, and out on the ice they go, and you're thinking broken shoulder, broken hip, you're thinking broken pelvis, months spent in a nursing home, recovering or not recovering, maybe, but off across the ice they go in the midst of fathers teaching their children how to skate backwards, and boys trying to play hockey, and couples skating way out into the dark on the lake. We're like some primitive tribe of winter people. We're worshipers of stars and worshipers of ice. If you can't skate, you can drive out on the ice. You can drive out, and there's a big bonfire out in the middle, sitting around a bonfire on ice on a lake. That's exciting. You sit out there and people are talking about this and that. It's like an ancient tribe of hunters and gatherers out there, storytellers, people who have no sense of time. Men have no sense of time because we are storytellers, and in stories, everything is now. It's always in the present. And so when a woman asks us, do you remember what day today is? We have no idea, no sense of anniversaries or birthdays. Everything is in the present. But if you sit around the bonfire and you're telling stories of valor and stories of fishing, and someone turns to me and says, why don't you ever fish? That's my cue to tell the story of my grandfather. Before he met my grandmother and begat my mother, my grandfather loved to fish on the ice, and he woke up in the middle of the night, and the moonlight was in his face, and he felt the urge to go out on the ice and to fish. And he walked out there, and it wasn't that cold out. It wasn't that cold. He found a hole in the ice, and he put the bait on the hook, and he stood there fishing through the hole, and it wasn't that cold at all. And then he noticed that nobody else was fishing, and there were no fish houses out on the ice. And then he remembered that it was March, and the ice started to move under his feet, and it was moving out towards the middle of the lake, and he didn't know how to swim. He came from fisher people, and fishing people in the old country, they never learned how to swim because they knew if the boat capsized, they would die. That's all there was to it, and swimming would only prolong the agony. So he had no idea how to swim, and then he felt a bite on his line, fishing through the hole in the ice floe that was drifting towards the middle of the lake. He felt a big fish on the line. And my grandfather, who had worked with horses all of his life, teams of horses, he pulled to the left and he guided that fish in towards shore. He worked with that fish and he guided it in towards shore to where he could leap off. And then he pulled the fish in. It was 5 feet long, weighed 150 pounds, and he eased the hook out of that fish's lower lip and he helped it out into deeper water. And that's why I never fish, because had it not been for that fish, I might not exist. My grandfather married my grandmother, they had my mother, and then I came along. And why should I kill a member of a species that is responsible for my very being? That is a story that means a lot to me, and I'm so glad that you asked me to tell that story here around the fire. Well, as I say, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota. The Lutheran Church came out well this year. They came out $40,000 in the black. Don't ask how it happened, but Pastor Liz now is sitting on top of the world. Lutherans aren't supposed to feel pride, but she does. And all the people who don't care for Pastor Liz, because she is a good pastor and a good preacher, you know, those people find it awkward to say anything against her. She's been out visiting old people even older than myself. She's been out visiting. She went out to visit Arne Gullickson. Arne Gullickson, who had open heart surgery 2 weeks ago. She looked for him down at the Good Shepherd home. He wasn't in the cafeteria, wasn't in the room. She looked all over and she looked out the back window, and there he was, this man in a bathrobe. He was in his wheelchair and he was out on the ice. He was heading out on the ice. He had a bottle of whiskey in his lap. He had a fishing pole there. He was headed out, a happy man, happy as somebody of that strict upbringing could possibly be. And so am I. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.